Lake will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is July 21st, 1982. The interview is taking place in the home of Bertel Gilje and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. What is your full name, please?
Full name, Bertel Pedersen Gilje. Pedersen was my father's family name, but I was baptized after my grandfather's name, Bertel Gilje.
That's a little unusual, isn't it?
Yes, but it is also done in some families. Like my father, he was called after my grandfather on father's side. So he had the name Norbotten in between.
Oh.
Pedersen.
I see. But Gilje was your father's name.
No, that was not. Pedersen was my father's name, family name. And I was baptized after my grandfather from his place called Gilje.
I see. And where is that place?
That is 6 miles from, 6 Norwegian miles from Stavanger, in the fjord there.
When were you born, Mr. Gilje?
I was born November 10th, 1903.
Mm-hmm.
And my birthday date is also my grandmother's date. So I had the birthday on the same date, although she was...
And where were you born?
In Stavanger.
In Stavanger, yes. In the city of Stavanger.
In the city, yes.
Okay. And now let's just get the record straight. What were your parents' names, your mother and father?
My father's name was Andreas Pedersen, and mother's name was Karen Gilje. But they got married, and that Gilje name was following me because I was the younger. Boy in the family.
Mm-hmm. And your mother's maiden name?
Karen Gilje. Mm-hmm. And then she married my father.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, he used to be a cook on sail ships. So he was sailing on to Spain and Italy and Middle East, Harvard. So when he came back to Norway, Stavanger, he married my wife, my mother, and so they...
Okay. Now, your father's was that his occupation for most of his life?
No, most of his life, World War I came on. So he... stayed on in Stavanger, and his occupation there was longshoreman, because he didn't want to go out on the oceans at that time, because everybody was shooting down these Scandinavian ships.
But prior to that, he'd been working on the sailing ships.
Yeah.
Okay. What, and your mother, did she have a special occupation?
No. Just married after she took care of all the children. We were 5 sisters and 2 brothers in the family.
Can you repeat all the names?
All the names? The oldest one was Anna. And they all had this family name, Pedersen. Anna. Taletta was number 2, also Pedersen, and Maria, number 3, Pedersen, Andrea, number 4, also Pedersen, and my brother, Peter, Pedersen, Norbotten.
Mm-hmm.
because he took my grandfather's name after his my grandfather on father's side.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time in Norway that people shouldn't have their name Petersen, Olsen, Svensson, and Nielsen, and so forth. And that's why my brother took that Norbotten name.
Mm-hmm.
And I was baptized Gillian.
Why did people decide they wanted to do that?
They were started something that they drummed up and wanted to be more names from the place where they were born or where they were growing up.
To take more place names as a kind of identity, would you say? Or?
Yes, that must have been.
Okay.
You see, in my family, when we had vacations, there was six with the name of Bertel Gilje, coming in from Stavanger or from the surrounding towns, and they all came to Gilje to visit their grandparents. And I am one of those six, or seven.
And the name Bertel, what?
That was also included in all these families. Like my uncle Andreas, he had one with the name Bertel, and Tante Anna, she lived at Klepp, she had one boy called Bertel, and so forth.
Now, did you say the name Bertel meant something in particular, or?
No, that was just to call it up after grandfather.
Oh, okay. And the place name Gilje, is the place near Stavanger. Does that name have a meaning, or is it just the place name?
That's the place, like you come to the valley, up in the valley, and there's all that section called Gilje. So all these people, whether they are 7, 8, or 10 farms there, they call themselves Gilje.
Okay. And what do you remember about your grandparents on both sides? Can you tell me about your grandparents?
Well, on my father's side, my grandfather there, he was a school teacher. And he was from Sunnfjord, no, from Bergen. And the family there was two or three sisters and so forth. But he was the school teacher for that that section they called Norrbotten. And Norrbotten was Norrbotten, Sørrbotten, Botten, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So they all had the name Norrbotten or Sørrbotten also. That was on my father's side, but he went out fishing one time. And he drowned because he got a big fish in the boat. And this was one of these big, crater.
Like a hook?
Yeah, the fish's name was crater in Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those great big ones, and the fish came in the boat and he tumbled over.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather died, drowned.
Did you know him?
Never, no. But my father had several sisters, two of them came over here and two brothers came over here. One was living in Silverdale and he was close to the U-boat station there in Silverdale. And then I go over to my father on mother's side, grandfather there. He was a regular farmer, and he lived to a little over 60 years old. Mm-hmm. My grandmother lived till she was 93, and her oldest son, my uncle there, he was 98 before he passed on. So in that family, Gilliar family, there was quite a few that was older people before they passed on.
Now, can you describe your childhood home to me? Did you grow up in the city?
Yes, I grew up in Stavanger, and close to my home, the Norway was building a chapel there, and there was a park, they call it Sankt Johannes Park, and the church was Sankt Johannes Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I was confirmed in Sankt Johannes Church. I went to the school they called Johannes School, and there in Johannes we had our pastor there. His name was Johan Lunde, and he became bishop in Oslo after 10-15 years time in our church.
What was Stavanger like in those days as you were growing up as a child?
That was a city that was growing by leaps and bounds, because my father bought the ground and built the home. Two blocks away from the city line, the next was the farmland where my relatives came from Gilliar, and they bought pieces of land, farmlands, all over that place there. And when we say we are going into to visit anybody in outside Stavanger, there was sure enough related to my family, because they came there, bought their part of the farmlands there, and they started farming, and making, what should I say, they were making vegetables, of course, went to the market place in Stavanger, and
this was, your father was part of this farming operation?
Well, yes, but he did mostly longshoreman's
work. Oh, longshoring, that's
yeah.
Right.
But he had a peculiar thing. He knew how to prepare the herring, salted the herrings and laid them down in big barrels and so forth. So when some of these people that prepared the fish needed him, they called him in to be overseer, to make sure that everything was done the right way.
For the fish packing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, your home was a like a farmhouse, or?
No, I have the home. My home was a three-story building. And my father, he, of course, when somebody came and needed an apartment, they rented the basement or the first floor from my father. He always was generous to get somebody from Gilliar to live there. And then the second floor, we were living on the second floor for many years, But my father wanted to see the ocean and the fjords out. So we moved up to the third floor. And he was, as I said, a sailor years ago. He had his binoculars, sat there and looked out to see what ship was coming into Stavanger. And of course, I went in on to learn to play trumpet in the music band in Stavanger. And that gave me the chance. When my brother was through with the school band, I was in there and learning the next day. And my brother was second generation there. So he left before Norway started the first school bands festival in 1918. Mm-hmm. And I have my papers for that. Do you mind if I show it to you? After I had been with the band, they had a 50 year celebration.
How old were you when you started the band?
In the band, I was 10 years old.
10 years old.
See, this is the boys' band, the name of it. Mm-hmm. When they had 50 year celebration, I learned about it. And you
played the trumpet?
I played the trumpet there for many, many, many years. But I also, when I had been in here, they had their 50-year celebration.
Mm-hmm. In Stavanger?
In Stavanger, and I sent them a story. If you read Norwegian, know that I don't know. But there is the band that I was with.
And that picture was taken in 1912.
Yes.
That's about when you started. Well,
no, I started in 13.
13, uh-huh.
Yeah. But...
And what types of... what was the function of the band? What did you play for, and where did you perform? And
we, after that first Norwegian music festival in 1918, we started for every 2 years, we started to have a festival. Just like you have it here, the band goes here, the band goes there, just like they do here now. And then I went to Bærum in Oslo. Oslo was capital city, and we were 2,000 boys at the first time we came from all over Norway to have this festival. And I didn't think any more about it, then there was another beginning. Then when I had been there, that was my first trip out of Stavanger with a boat to Oslo and playing for the king. There was something for me.
Yes.
And for all of us. Now, this place here, Haslum Bærum, mother and I and the family, we had 2 children then, we came to Norway to take over a position as a regular bookbinder in Oslo, and I had to take my master bookbinder's examination. And after half a year's time, we were living on Holmenkollen. That was the going up to the ski resort. Then we got a house to live in Bærum, outside Oslo. And there was only a Sunday's afternoon trip to the Stabæk, where we went to that music festival in 1940.
So you ended up very near the same place.
Yes, we could take trips any Sunday when the weather was good.
We'll get more into your living in Oslo a little later.
Yeah.
Going back to Stavanger, now that is it was a city, not a large city, but I imagine it was a little different than some of the Norwegians who grew up in the fjords and more isolated. You went to school, you had a regular public schooling there? And
yes, I had my public schooling with 8 years in the public school. My brother went to middle school and my sister went to middle school, but for my part, I went to the regular trade work as a bookbinder, learning the apprenticeship.
What age did you start that then?
In 15 years.
And was there any reason why you went into the bookbinding trade?
Well, that was because we had friends that was in the printing trade there, and I thought, my mother thought, that would be a good place for me. Instead, I didn't want to go to the school, except at the trade, where I had to spend 4 winter years at technical evening school. Besides to the going to through the trade. And when I was finished with the school and the trade, my employer, he was a second generation German. He gave all his apprentices a trip out in the world, mostly to Denmark and Germany and Sweden. So in Copenhagen there was a trade school, they called it Institute of Technology, that also had the trade of printing and lithographic printing and bookbinding, art bookbinding. So he sent me there for 3 months the first time. That was 1924, after I was through as an apprentice.
The apprentice program takes 6 years?
No, 4 years that time.
4 years.
Yeah. So I came back home. His business was slowing down, just like it does now. Failure here, there, places. So he laid off some of us youngsters. He didn't lay off a person that was married and had family. He laid off the people that was singing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in 1926. So I was out of work. But I was playing in the band. I could earn a little money that way. But the funny part of it was over there that what you made extra money, even if you were not working, you had to pay city tax. So when the city band was paid 800 kroner for the summer months to play in the city band, city park. So I came to New Year, 1926. City sent me an income tax, 800 kroner I had to pay for my tax. So you know, I couldn't be a musician with that, because
you hadn't earned enough.
I wanted to be a musician to begin with, but I didn't. After that, $800 from the city, they paid me in the summertime for my work, and took $800 from my taxes. So I quit that and continued after a half year's time, I said to my father and mother, I will go to the United States. Like I had relatives that used to be building trades, carpenter and builders and so forth. They were home for a visit and they wanted to go back again. And of course I decided to go with them. We were all in all six people, all related to each other.
What relation were they to you?
One was uncle, one was married to my aunt, and two of these youngsters, they were second cousins, and so forth. So there we went in April of 1927.
April 1927?
Yeah. We went over with the ship to Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. Now tell me a little bit about your journey. As far as, did it take time to prepare to go? Did you need to get a special permission to go? Did that take time? And where did the ship leave from? And all the circumstances.
That ship went from Oslo till Stavanger, where it picked up the people there. And it took us 13 days.
13 days?
13 days to come over to Brooklyn, New York.
What was the trip across like? What was the ship like?
The ship was just a big hotel for me to just roam around as a youngster, and we had all kinds of fun there. We listened to the band playing music every day, and we went to our dinners and meals, three meals. So I didn't have any regrets for that trip over there.
And you were traveling with your family relations?
Yes, my relations. When I came to Brooklyn, New York, one of my family's relationships, he went over to a lumber yard and he managed to get me a job there. And I stayed on for a month or two.
Did you intend to stay in New York City?
No, I didn't. I have had an uncle in Minnesota. But I stayed on in order to earn a little expense money to go to my uncle in Minnesota.
Do you remember how much it cost to come over on the ship? Your passage by?
No, I don't remember that. No.
The name of the ship you came on?
The name I came with was Stavanger Fjord. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt about leaving Norway?
Well, as a youngster, I must say that I was happy to leave because my father had a big family, and I felt that I shouldn't be of a burden to my family. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, had their relatives going with me, so they were satisfied with me.
Had you lived in your parents' home while you were working in Norway? Until you came to America, did you have your own place, or were you living with your parents?
I lived with my parents,
yes.
Because they had a big enough family for six, seven children, and I was having my attic's little room. In that attic, I could look out over the city, because they had a window just to lift it up, and I could see all over the city there and all over the city harbor and the fjord, Stavanger Fjord. So
it was a beautiful place, or?
A nice place when it came to scenery. When I looked out from the street, I could look across the fjord to the Norwegian mountains inland. So I was perfectly satisfied with everything.
So you were, do you remember your impressions when you first got to New York? What did you think the first time you saw America?
Well, there was, I was surprised. Everything was so beautiful in every respect. The streets and the location where we located ourselves was close to the Norwegian Seamen's Church. Or a few blocks away. So we could always go to the Norwegian service.
This is in New York?
In Brooklyn, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, when I should go to work, it took me over an hour to travel with the subway. And I was a youngster, but I was not alone, because so many of those Norwegian immigrants that came before me had gotten a job over on Long Island, and they worked, some of them worked in the lumber yard, like I did for 1 month.
Mm-hmm. So you could communicate?
Yeah. And I had 1 year's experience in learning English in Norway.
Oh. Now, but how did you learn in school, or?
I learned that in school, yeah. The eighth grade. Yeah.
So that helped.
Yeah.
Did you intend to continue with the bookbinding when you came over?
Yes, I intended to go in the printing trades and look for a job. But I didn't have to. When I came to my uncle in Minnesota, he had already booked me in with Augsburg Publishing House. You know where that is. And they gave me a chance.
And which city, where is this?
That was in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle had already spoken to one person that possibly a pastor in a church there, because I just worked on his farm for 6 weeks, and then I dropped right back to my trade in bookbinding. And from there on, I just took my chance with the union, Bookbinders Union. You see, I had my papers from Norway as a bookbinder. And the Bookbinders Union, they understood I was qualified for that. Do you mind if I show you that?
No, that's fine.
Finish up as an apprentice boy. This is what they gave me.
This is from
yeah,
Norway.
They call it Svennebrev.
And that means?
That means that I was a qualified bookbinder, that I had learned by trade.
Is Svennebrev the name? Does that mean bookbinder?
Yes, but all these here is my name. And you see there, Bertel Pedersen Gilje. And here is my good, that means good in every part of the bookbinder.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the people assigned it, and there is the police master.
Yeah.
He was the...
And it has a... illustrations on the side showing different pictures of bookbinding.
To show that this one here was, I used to pay this for Oh, for many years after I came here to this country, because I wanted to be back in Norway. 3 years after I had started to work as a bookbinder here, I went to Norway trying to come back.
When you came over to this country, did you intend then to return to Norway someday?
I intended first to come back to Norway.
Yes.
And I came back to Norway, but they had already made that clause in the bookbinder's trade, that the last one coming into the trade, he will be the first to go out if there is a shortness of work. And there it says there, on Verksbrev, Bertil Peggy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's okay.
This one here, when I had a chance to get a bigger position in Norway, that was when I came back in 1939. That means I was qualified to be a master bookbinder on Verksbrev. There you have the name too, Bertil Pedersen Gill. And that was from...
Can you read the certificate, what it says? Can you read it in Norwegian?
Yeah. Bertil Pedersen Gilje, som har godgjort å følge de foreskrevne vilkår, meddeles herved næringsbrev for håndverk i bokbinderifaget i Oslo by. Håndverksbrevet trer i kraft straks. Gebyr til statskassen kroner 25 betales. Oslo byfogdembedet. Second of the annen avdeling den 23. april 1940. They gave me that in 1940. I came in 1939. And Harald Larsen, Oslo byfogds embedder, avdeling, IRN and the seal.
Yes, okay. No, thank you. Now let's go back a little bit to what happened, the circumstances when you came to Minnesota. You say you knew a little bit of English. Did you live by yourself, or did you live with your uncle? And
no, there I lived by myself. But in Minneapolis, there were so many Norwegian people there that most of them spoke Norwegian, and most of them came in from after 1920 or so, because that was after the World War I. Everybody was out of work in Norway, so they had to emigrate. And I must say I was lucky to have gone with my relatives. Then when I was through with the Augsburg Publishing House.
What type of work did you do for them?
Bookbinding, yes.
What can you tell me a little bit about what the bookbinding the bookbinding trade, is it when you bind books, what does it involve? Is it individual books?
To be a bookbinder in those days, you could be binding library books, mostly library books. Then you had one or two or three of each.
Uh-huh.
And they went as a special binding to the libraries, wherever they were. And I had to sew the books, I had to glue them up, and I had to make the covers for them, and I also had to print the names, the titles of the books, and so forth.
About how long does that take for the average book?
well, we could say, with all this drying time that we need with the glue and so forth, we could say 2.5 hours. But you see, where I learned the trade over in Norway, we had folkeboksamlingens bøker. There was Norway's variety of libraries sent the books or ordered the books from this company I worked for. And we could make, let us say, 100 books of one type and put it in storage until the library sent the order for it.
So working in Minneapolis now, what seemed to you the most difficult part about being in America?
Well, it was difficult to start with my language. But as I said, when I started in Minneapolis and Minnesota, that was much easier for me because so many immigrants lived there.
Yes.
But then I went to Chicago for myself, notified the union that I was looking for a average bookbinding job for the big companies. And I got in with R. Donnelly's printing company in Chicago. If you have heard of that company, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And so you worked for them until you went back to Norway?
No, I didn't work for them always, because they also had slack period, and I had to do something else. So, but I was there for over 3 years.
Now, did you meet your wife in this country?
No, I met her on a ship going back home.
Back home the first time?
Tell me
about your, just give me the overview of your career. Then you went back to Norway,
well,
which year?
I had gotten a job for from Chicago. I was given a job through the union to work for economy advertising company, Iowa City. And Iowa City is a university town or a university city for Iowa. And there was what we called the yearbook for the students of Iowa City University.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 3 months work there to work with several of these school annuals, as we call them. By doing that, I became free from always having the Norwegians around me. There in Iowa City, I had students to talk to, and some of them lived in dormitories, but I lived in a home where there was Americans, most of them.
Did the pay in America compare with the pay for bookbinding in Norway, or were conditions?
Oh, much better. Yes, because I could, as a single person, save up money. I borrowed my money from my sister in Norway, and I, from my lumberyard's experience of 1 month, I sent her the ticket. But then I went to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I had a good salary, but I don't remember the amount.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a union paid for me. And as long as they had work, I worked.
Mm-hmm. So you thought conditions were good here?
Yes.
Now, so we'll continue on the other side in your returns back to Norway.
Well, I was trying to get a job, and I got the job, but the union had stopped me from continuing, because when there was slack season for the printing and bookbinding, then they sent me out. But I had been fortunate in Iowa City to ask the company there, can I come back next spring when you are in need of school annuals season? And they signed me up. So I stayed home till after Christmas that year. And I wrote them a letter and told them that I will be back in April. And they waited for me and gave me the job again as a bookbinder for the season of 3 months.
Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you went back to Norway.
Yeah, I was in Norway at that time. But see, there was 2 times that I went in to work for the same company in Iowa City. And from Iowa City, I got another job in Des Moines, Iowa, also in a bookbindery. So you see, I was lucky enough to get work.
To work at your trade, huh?
Yeah.
Now you say you met your wife on the boat to Norway, going back from New York?
Yeah, that was the second time I went to Norway. My wife came with another Stavanger fuel, and I was on Bergen fuel.
Mm-hmm.
She, wasn't it Stavanger fuel that lost the propeller?
No, yes.
Yeah. The boat lost the propeller out in the Atlantic. So that boat where she was on had to go back to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the boat that was going to Norway at that time. So I saw her there, and that's...
And you were married in which year then?
That was in 1936, wasn't it?
With a boat, a special boat?
No, we were married in 1936.
Imagine July 36.
And in Norway or in America?
In Norway.
Then right in that house.
Is that your family place?
That's my home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So there you see, we were married in 1936.
And so you were immigrating to this country? You were coming over at the time that you met. She was on her way over here to America?
No, we really went home on the same boat, but I didn't know him then. And then we came back on the same boat.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. And where did you continue to live? Now tell me how did you end up out here in the Northwest after all of this?
Well, here's the... Then I had to go back to my third trip to Norway in 1939. I had been working in Brooklyn and in Canal Street or wherever. I had a job as a paper cutter. And Roosevelt came in. It was a bad time at that time. And she went to the same young people's organization in the churches in Brooklyn, and I went to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we, I jumped a little there.
That's okay.
How?
Huh?
Well, I jumped over something there. But
well, you, when you were, before you were married, you went to the same organizations in New
York?
Yes,
yes.
Well, these were Norwegian organizations?
Yeah, church organizations.
Uh-huh,
yes.
And so that's how you continued to meet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we came back to these places. We were married in Norway in 36.
Uh-huh.
Then we stayed there and we got two children.
In Norway?
In Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Two children there. There was Audrun and Karhil.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the first ones we had. And I never liked to see the children grow up in Brooklyn or New York at all. So I again put in an application for work that was in Oslo, and I got the position to come back to Norway.
Now you had not become a United States citizen?
No.
You
had that lasted up till I was 51, in 1951.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we came home with two children, I had to take that master bookbinder's paper in order to take care of the bindery with 64 bookbinders and girls.
Mm-hmm. So you were at the head of a company?
Yeah.
In Norway. And you went back with your wife and two children.
In that company there was one thing we called Salme Books Forlaget. There was the publishing of songbooks for the church. There was one part. And that went out to all the churches in Norway, but they had to order through the publishing house there. Then we also had the libraries of Norway. Folkebokssamlingens Expedition, they called it. That was taking care of all the libraries' need of books.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they needed, they could write to this department, and we would, in the bindery, have them all bound up, 200 or 300 at a time.
Mm-hmm. So you say that then the war came along too while you were in Norway working?
Yes. 2 years, a year after we came there, we came in June 1939, and in April 1940 the Germans occupied everything. I was trying to get out of the Norway then. Impossible. No boats would leave at such a time. But I had my steady job, and it was a real good job too, but it was tough for me because the Germans came in every day. They came and inspected what we were doing, what we should do for them. They found out that I had enough genuine leather for them to qualify them, so they could say we want this and that in genuine leather.
Mm-hmm. Did they pay for what they asked for?
Oh yes, there was not there was one thing that I could raise my prices. I was calculating the prices for all the work we did for the Germans at that time. And I could also tell the Germans, I need so and so different types of material. And they gave it to me. Well, when I'm telling you, I could demand so and so many thousands of yards of thread, so and so many kilos of glue and paper and cardboard and material, regular cloth. They would give it to me. But he did that to all us bookbinding supervisors in the city of Oslo. So we had a hard time to always keep up with what we wanted for the Norwegian publishers. I had books in there, I can tell you, and show you those books. I show you some of them. That they came to me from Stavanger, where I learned my trade. They came to me and asked me, Bertel, can you supply us with some material? If the books were 200 or 500, I could always supply them. But if they came and said, we need for 10,000, then I could only say, I can give you paper material, but I can't give you genuine good material to 10,000.
So what happened then? How long did you remain in Norway during all those years?
Well, I was in Norway till the war was over, and a little longer.
What brought you back to America this next time?
That time, I had, when I could write to America, to the, what was the name of the publishing, no. That magazine, book production magazine in New York. I had been supplying for that, subscribing for that. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to the manager of that company there, and I asked him, will you put an ad in the paper and my wife's cousin will give you the money for that ad. And sure, they put it up in their paper, and they went out to several of these print shops, and two of them wrote to me from United States when the war was over, asked me to come and start working. There I was. Norway, I didn't want to stay there after the war. I was through because I had such a disappointing time. So one advertising was the military service company. There was some young people that was going to all these military service places all over the United States and taking subscription for all these different magazines that we have. Well, what shall I say? All these magazines that we have here, they were taking subscription there. Mm-hmm. And I should come and help them to make binders for them. Only binders they wanted. So I learned to make those binders just as perfect as I was working in Chicago and in Philadelphia, because they had to go to Chicago and get those binders. Mina Darmore and Mina, what do you call them all? I just told.
And so where were you living then?
I was living then in, I took the job and I went directly over till Birmingham, Alabama. That was my beginning again in the United States. And Birmingham, Alabama was going to be a little too hot for me. But I started that bindery for them. And they came to me with the order for so and so many binders. And I kept on for them for 3 years and 4 years. Then I said, why don't you start binding books? I can qualify and teach the boys that I had in the bindery to do the work. They didn't want to. They were satisfied with what they sold. Only that the binders. Then I happened to be kind of sick and tired of that one-sided work. So there was an advertisement in one of the papers after 4 years' time over in Spokane. A man wanted to sell his bindery. And the man's name was Arneson, Scandinavian name. They wrote to them, asked him, and I wanted to buy it. I wanted to sell my bindery in Birmingham, the machinery. So I made an agreement with him that he should stay with me 3 months till I had got myself organized. All right. That was in, what time was it? I took it over in August or September of 19. When did we go to Spokane? What year?
54.
54, yeah. 54. All right. Well, I came up there and had a nice trip with my car. I bought a car, but I didn't have my license to drive. But I found a man that had his truck driver's license in Birmingham. And he took us up with a truckload of furniture or whatever up to Spokane. I came into that bindery where I should take over. What happened? 3 days after I came, I had to organize everything because the man was sick. 3 days after, he passed away and died. What could I do? 3 days after I had taken and wanted to sign an agreement with him, well, all I could do was to rent the machinery. Because I learned something there. Just think of it. He had two sons. One was working in South Dakota. He was a bookbinder. He didn't want his father's bindery. The other one was a union representative in Los Angeles. he didn't want to take it over either. And I had enough work for 14 days in that bike. And there I rented the place. I had just enough.
Like a little more?
How
I have to use a cane, but I don't.
Thank you.
Do you need eyes?
This is fine.
Right.
So, now, how did you get to Tacoma?
Well, that was I was there for 8 months in Spokane, and I did a fairly good business for myself, but that wasn't satisfactory because of this thing that the bindery had been very, very bad condition. His owner was sick and couldn't take on more work than just qualified for keeping on. So after 8 months in Spokane, I was asked by Pioneer Printing Company here in Tacoma to come over and take up over as a foreman in that bindery. And I did. So it was easy for me to travel from that place because my renting was up any time. I didn't want to stay there so with the bindery there. So I left. Mm-hmm. And then they took me over there for their foreman's job. And I was satisfied. For a long time I was there. Then the Washington State printing plant needed a man. And I thought, let me try that. That was to come in with the civil service. And they gave me the job right away. There was nothing waiting there. And I came over here, started the work, and my wife looked for this house. There was a new place for my wife and my children. There was no houses up there, and there was no house like back in the alley here.
And so you've been in Tacoma since
so
then?
I have been in Tacoma.
When did you become a citizen of?
Well, that was in 1951, when I was in Birmingham, Alabama. I decided to, it was better for me to get my citizenship papers fully. I had the first paper for all these 3 years. But I get that in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering, in living in Tacoma, have you been active in the Norwegian organization?
Yes, I was active in the singles. I came over here and went into the Norwegian singles in 1955. And then of course I was a Norwegian member of the Sons of Norway and Normansforbundet. We became members there. And what more? She became the member in the ladies
mm-hmm.
auxiliary there.
I
was members all the way up to this January when I decided I am too old to sing. So
and you were singing in which group?
Normanna.
The Normanna chorus. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Here in Tacoma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, has it been important to you? Was it important to you to be part of those Scandinavian groups here?
Yes, indeed. But now I miss them because I quit. I felt that my voice was getting too grumsy, and I still feel that I I'm not qualified for singing anymore.
But you enjoyed the fellowship with other people from from Norway, and
yes.
Do you belong to any other groups or organizations, or have you belonged?
Well, that is No Man's Forbundet.
Now, what is that?
That is the Norwegian Society for Norwegian people that are outside of Norway, living outside of Norway.
Uh-huh.
We are. Let me show you the one that they have. That is the Sons of Norway's Viking.
Yes.
That I get every month because I'm a member of that group. And No Man's Forbundet, that is the one that they have a headquarters in Oslo, Norway, and they have their branches all over the world.
Yes. When were you last in Norway?
We went in last year in April. And we stayed there for 4 or 5 months in Norway. And we had one of our grandchildren with us, because I bought a car over in Sweden, as I have been doing 2-3 times before. That was the last time I was in Norway, but I went 1975, I went first to Norway, myself, and then I came back to attend to that Norwegian Singers Society's festival here in Seattle. Then 10 days after we were through with that festival there, I took my wife with me and we went back to Norway again to stay. For how long time did we stay?
I don't know.
In 1975, when you went with me.
To Norway, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, exactly how long? I think we were there about 3 months.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And you visit your family? Do you go to Stavanger?
Yeah, we were there and we visited her family, my family, and all around Sørlanda at that time. Last year, my granddaughter, was with us, and she was 18, almost 18 years old. She had gotten her driver's license so she could drive all over Norway, and I got my car. We went to Gothenburg. She was with me and mother was with us. And we got our car then. And from then on, this young girl wouldn't let me drive the car. She was so enthused about it that she was driving 7,000 miles in Norway with my car. And I could only beg her to have a car for 10, 15 minutes.
That was just the best thing.
The road we took.
All right.
When she was driving. This is Norway's.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we have our cabin around here.
This is your family cabin?
Her oldest sister passed away, and see Gatekärnan. And we went from here, up here.
Down along the southern coast?
To here, first.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Julie is from.
Kristiansand.
Kristiansand in Mandal. Well, then we went up here, over here, and back.
Mm-hmm.
That was with our granddaughter. Then we also went one more trip. Same thing, coming here.
Going through Telemark?
Yes, and all over to here.
To Haugesund?
To Haugesund, yes. And you said Nesvik is someplace around here. You can't see the name.
It's right. It's near Jämtland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It must be right in here. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we came down here. I should try to come into Sun.
Yes.
That time. But we couldn't. They told us the boat wouldn't take us to Stavanger there. So we had to go over here to Haugesund and to Karmøy.
Mm-hmm.
There we could take the ferry boat from Karmøy to Stavanger. And then the granddaughter of ours, she really learned to drive. Just think of it. She came with me. I was driving through Oslo. And we were going back from Oslo. I was driving through, and she was driving back.
Yeah.
And she knew every street in Oslo where we had been before.
Do your children and your other grandchildren take an interest in Norway and in the Norwegian culture?
They will. No. No. I can't say they do.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing they do say is, Grandpa, we want the books, see? They want the books. But I wanted to give, and I gave to Sons of Norway, gave them around 100 or 150 books for their library here. There was books that didn't mean anything to me.
Did your children or your grandchildren learn to speak Norwegian?
No. My two oldest daughters, Karhild and Audrun, went to school in Norway during the war.
Mm-hmm.
So they can read and speak Norwegian.
Yeah.
My son Bjørnulf, he didn't go to school there, but he was born there, and of course he learned from the people how to speak Norwegian. But he didn't go to school.
Do they go back and do they visit Norway too? Your children?
They will sooner or later.
Yeah.
There was one family, they went, was it in 69, mother, that Karhild and her family?
59, I think.
59? Oh, yeah. Well, they went to Norway and came and visited us there in 59.
They took a trip all around in Europe. They were always south.
Yeah,
they were 59.
Oh, you talk about Karhild and Audrun only, but I mean the family, the grandchildren.
That was
Sigrid
and maybe.
Yeah, that was 69.
Did you and your wife speak Norwegian to one another still? And do you use it? Do you use the Norwegian language now?
Yes, more so now than before. I didn't have to use Norwegian at all when I was working in the print shops, because I spoke in English then. But now, the last 2 years, we have been speaking mostly Norwegian.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite saying or a little poem or a song or a prayer or something that you know from memory that you could just say so we could hear you speaking Norwegian?
How do you know?
Is there anything, a little favorite expression you have in Norwegian, or a verse from a song, or a prayer, or anything you might say in Norwegian?
Do you have anything that you want to say in Norwegian? How do you know or see so snak norsk? Did you hear that? How do you know or see so snak norsk?
Well, then we got to hear you speak Norwegian right then and there.
Yeah.
Yes. You've had a different life than many of the immigrants who came over and stayed. I mean, you were going back and forth. Do you feel like you were a Norwegian and American, or how did you feel about Norway and America?
I feel that I belong here just as much as I belong in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that when I go to Norway, to my hometown of Stavanger, I had childhood days and the younger days where I was playing with the band. We were dedicating several statues and monuments and so forth in Stavanger. And what did I... This one here, that was in my band, city band. We were marching over to a park in Stavanger to dedicate a monument
mm-hmm.
after Kling Persen
mm-hmm.
and Restorationen.
Yes, it's a nice photograph.
Restoration, that was the Norwegian American parade in Stavanger, July 1925.
Mm-hmm.
That was before I left from the
mm-hmm.
United States. Dedication of Restorationen, that was a monument for 100 years emigration from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1825, the first time he left. And there was another one that was also, another monument in the park in Stavanger, down in the middle of the city. That was the Norwegian, the American Norwegian came home to Stavanger to dedicate a monument there in remembrance of the Norwegian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, there was another.
So when you go back to Stavanger, then do you can still remember these places where you performed in the band?
Every bit of it. They will come to me, some of those people that I knew, if they still are alive. They will come to me, so Bertel, you are here again.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, from 1975, 76, 77, 78, 79, when mother had that stroke, 80 we didn't go.
But you were going every year?
Every year from 75.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I wanted to go this year too. But something came up. You don't mind if I tell that. I have been getting my Norwegian, we call it folketrygd, social security, same as here. I have been getting a small part of that from the country, Norway. They call it folketrygd. So I have been getting that up to March this year, when they said that you didn't stay long enough in Norway, so we had to cut that down a little bit. Just last Sunday, my daughter, Karin, helped me with sending a protest to them in Norway. And we both told them that well, she pays electricity, she pays property tax, and so forth, for the water on her cabin. She paid that through her bank account over there. So what could we do? We protested all of it and sent it in Monday morning this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And now I would just wait for them to say, send me a form so I can write that form and try to get it back in full,
mm-hmm.
as I used to get it. Because we had $850-some-odd every month, both of us. One for me, one for her, 800. So we could go to Norway every year.
Yeah.
Now this year, I wanted to go by myself. But I wasn't quite able to do it, because I had been using some of that money time and again. Now, if they raise that up again, I will go next year right away.
You'd like to go. Now, what does it mean to you to go back to Norway and go back to Stavanger? Why do you think you want to go back so much?
So much because I feel at home.
Yeah.
Yes. My sister bought the house where I was born, my father's house. She took that over on herself. And she is 80 years or more. And she lives there. I have my room upstairs in my attic. Yet.
The same room.
Same room. My brother, he is in some kind of a old people's hospital home. And he has full control with the state of Norway, the country of Norway's, what do you call it, the amateur musicians organization. So he is just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I come, I just a guest from the United States.
What do you think about Norway today?
I think they are doing too much and are making too much money. That's what they are getting that oil circulation of money.
So Stavanger has changed a little bit since.
Oh, too much too. I wouldn't know Stavanger. The mentality in Stavanger is different from when I was there. I could go downtown in Stavanger, sit in the park. We had something we called the old people's bench. I could sit there and talk to one of the, if they were all real old people, I could talk to them as if they remember when I played in the park. Played in the park, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was so. Now I missed this choir here because I felt that I didn't sing good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But every songs that we have in the choir here, they are the same songs that I used to sing here.
What's one of your favorite songs from the chorus that you used to sing?
Oh, should I?
Did you have a favorite? One that you really enjoyed singing?
We have so many. Norge, mitt Norge. Oh, I must go back in the books in my hands.
Okay.
Look at it.
Okay.
I can't remember it now.
Okay.
Organizations paper.
Uh-huh.
We invited the people
to come for dinner at my father's home.
Yes.
So my father and mother, they had given me a full dinner with invitation from all my friends at the work. Well, can I stop now?
Okay. If there's anything else you'd like to add, I think that will be the end, and I'll say thank you very much for the interview.
Well, there is always something I like to say.
Okay.
And that is that when I go back to Norway, I have this music festivals that I went to. There was 75 years of that music, the band that I was with.
You had a 75th anniversary?
Yes, but I didn't... And here is what we had when I was there in 1978. There was no this music for Burns dinner. My wife and I was invited for that.
Well, that must really be nice for you to be included again.
And you should know how I feel when I come back home, because I meet my friends that I used to be together with, if they are still living. There was the festival museum, music concert, Norges Musikforbund.
1918 to 1978.
78, yes. That was 60 years for me, since I was with them.